I think it's about that time. Thanks everybody for joining bright and early, 8:30 in the morning on a Thursday. Hopefully the parties weren't too good last night. My name's Rob Howard. I'm a program manager on the Office Developer Platform team. We own pretty much anything related to extending Office with custom experiences or taking advantage of Office functionality in your own custom applications. And this morning, I'm going to take you on a deep dive into the Office 365 APIs. And right up front, while you still have a few seconds to run to a different session, I want to warn you, it will be a very deep dive. We're going to spend a bunch of time in Fiddler going through network traces. We're going to go through OAuth flows from scratch. We're going to do REST requests and parse JSON and do a whole bunch of really deep analysis of the APIs and how you take advantage of them. So if that doesn't sound like your cup of tea at 8:30 in the morning, I will not take offense if you go and find a different session. I don't want to waste your time. Just thought I'd give you guys the warning up front. That said, let's get started because we got a ton of stuff to cover. Real quick, brief agenda. I want to start with a little bit of context on what these APIs are, what they're for, why we built them, why we felt it was important to improve this particular scenario. Then we're going to go really deep into how authentication and the service calls work. There's a bunch of really cool tools that make actually taking advantage of these APIs really easy and straightforward, but they sort of obscure a bunch of very difficult things underneath the covers, and we're going to go and look at all of those very complicated things around auth, and we're going to go through them step by step so that even if you use those tools, you'll understand what's really going on underneath the covers. And then last, we're going to take the first step to get you on the road of actually integrating them into your applications. So we'll get you a bunch of resources, a bunch of starter projects, sample code that no matter what sort of application you're building, hopefully you can walk away from here and go try out adding Office 365 APIs into your applications. If you've seen some of the other Office sessions this week, you've probably already seen this slide, so I won't belabor the point too much, but this is kind of a high-level view of how we think about Office as a platform. On the left-hand side, you can see that we want you to be able to extend Office everywhere. We want you to be able to take your custom experiences and embed them inside of Office experiences, whether those are applications like Word, Excel, PowerPoint, or service applications like Outlook or SharePoint. We want you to build your custom applications and add them into our experiences to bring along the richness of your services within Office. And we announced a new ability to extend the Office 365 suite with your own apps in the suite navigation earlier this week. So hopefully you guys saw that. We also want you to be able to connect from within your custom applications, your websites, your device applications to Office 365 services. And Azure Active Directory's had a REST API there for a long time. We now, this week, made generally available a bunch of other Office 365 REST APIs for getting at files and mail, calendar, contacts. And this is really what we're going to focus on today, is those APIs, how you call them, how you auth to them, how you make the requests, what functionality is available, all kinds of stuff like that. And then the last is this build using an open platform, the idea that we want you to be able to choose whatever technologies and whatever tools you want to use to build your applications. So if you're building a native application in Android, we want to have a tool and a technology that lets you take advantage of Office in that technology. No matter what platform you're choosing, we think a solution for you. All right, so that's the context. Again, we're going to focus really, really specifically on the middle one today, on connecting to Office 365 services. There have been other talks, and there are some more talks this week, about tools on the right-hand side and platforms on the right-hand side, and there were talks earlier in the week. Mauricio gave a talk, I think, yesterday on extending Office everywhere. So if you didn't grab that content, go and check out the recording. There's a bunch more information about the left and the right side. But we're going to talk about the middle. And I want to start by giving just a little bit of context about the current state of the world, or the state of the world before we made these improvements. And these are just some screenshots of actual apps in app stores, some of them our apps that we built, that interact with Office 365 services. And there's some kind of ugly things about the way that these apps work, and it's not the app builder's fault. It was really the state of the platform before a bunch of these announcements. And you'll notice a few things. One is that these applications are asking you for your actual username and your actual password inside of the application itself. Obviously, not ideal from a security perspective. It means that the application actually has your username and password rather than just a token that represents you. And it means that they're probably not handling a bunch of auth cases right. Like if they're doing federated authentication with like an on-prem ADFS, that's probably not working. Or if you're a user who has multi-factor authentication enabled, this probably doesn't work for you either. And then on top of that, after they have your username and password, the application has all the permissions that you do. So if you happen to have access to something really secure, even if the app isn't something that should be able to access that, it's going to get that access by default. If you're a tenant administrator, that app can now do anything you can do because it has your username and password, rather than just being constrained to some small subset of that. And then the last piece around access is that if you want to revoke this app's access, if you want to say, oh, I no longer want this app to be able to access my stuff, your only choice is to change your username and password. And if you've got a bunch of different applications, that's a tough strategy because then you have to go and update it in the 9 other applications you just wanted to continue to have access. So there's some rough things around access. The other thing you'll notice is that several of these applications are actually asking you for a URL. So we see a URL field here and a URL field here. We're actually, in most of these applications, trying to figure out where your OneDrive for Business is. And it's this really long URL. I don't know if you've ever seen it in SharePoint, but it's, you know, got your tenant name, -my.sharepoint.com/personal/ then your email address, and then slash. And so it's a really long URL, and we're literally asking you to type that in on a phone or whatever device application that you're on, and then hit OK. Which is especially tragic because we actually know where it is. We know, you know, you've already logged in, we've got your authentication. We could tell you where it is. We just didn't have the service to be able to direct applications the right way. So there are a bunch of things that aren't ideal about the way that these applications work today, and that's why we built a bunch of this service API integration and these improvements with authentication and discovery that we'll talk about. And the first one that we're going to talk about is support for Azure Active Directory OAuth in Office 365. And this is basically the ability to, from a custom application, have a single authentication flow that gets you access in one consent prompt, in one user experience prompt, to all the Office 365 service APIs, whether they're running on Azure Active Directory or their Exchange services or their SharePoint services. You don't really have to understand any of that as an end user. You really just say, hey, here's the data that I want to give the application access to, and you hit OK. This flow works from both device apps and websites. So whether you're building a web application and you want to get access to this data, or you're building something for Android or iOS or Windows Phone, you can get access to it through Azure Active Directory. It also supports a couple of different kinds of consent. It allows an administrator to say, hey, I want this application to be connected on behalf of all the users in my tenant. So if my IT admin, say, purchases use of a specific application and wants to attach it and just give it access to everything that your tenant has, they have that capability. Or if you want to user by user build that trust and build that connection, then you can do that as well. And of course, we've got all the settings so that admins can say, oh, I don't really want my end users to be able to consent, and they can turn that off and have to approve all the applications and things like that. But the approval and those different options are both there. And then probably the most important part is that the actual protocol that you're using underneath all this is a great protocol. It's a secure protocol that addresses all the things we were talking about in the previous screen. It uses OAuth 2. That means that when you're actually logging in, you're logging into the website that is Microsoft Online website. You're not logging into the application when you type your username and password. So you're not actually capturing your user credentials. When you get access, you can see in the example over here, you're actually going to ask as an app for the specific things that you need, and you'll only get access to those things. So you don't automatically get access to a ton of stuff just because the user happens to be a tenant admin. And then this, of course, supports all of the different auth schemes that you can configure in Office 365, whether that's multi-factor authentication and you need the SMS or email verification before you can sign in, or you're doing federated sign-in with ADFS or something like that. All that works just very seamlessly with this. The application developer doesn't even have to understand that that's going on. And then once you have access, this access can be brokered long term. So when you get access through OAuth, you'll get a refresh token too, and that allows you to continue to come back on behalf of the user until the user said they don't want you to anymore to get access to their data and provide them some custom functionality based on that. OK, so this is the general description of it. I want to go through the flow real quick. If you guys are familiar with OAuth, this will look very similar to most OAuth flows. There's one small difference that I'll point out as we go along the way. But I'm actually going to walk through this flow step by step, so there's a couple things I want to make sure you remember here. There's four different parties as part of this. On the left-hand side, there's your native application. This can be either a device application or a web application. It actually works almost identically in both cases. And then there's two endpoints from Azure Active Directory that we'll see in detail. One of them is called the authorization endpoint, and one of them is called a token endpoint. And if you're familiar with OAuth, those are exactly the terms that they use in the OAuth spec, but we'll see exactly what those two do. That authorization endpoint is that web page, so this web page on the right side, that's telling you, hey, do you want to authorize this app to access these things? That's what the authorization endpoint is. Then there's a token endpoint, which is where the application is going to go to actually get the access token. The user said I could have access to this. Can you give me a token that gives me access? And then finally, there's the Office 365 API, which is the actual REST API you're going to go and call with that access token. So the way it works is this. The native application is going to send the user to the authorization endpoint. They're basically going to send you to that web page. There's a specific web page. They're going to load it up in like a web browser control or the web auth broker on Windows. In order to send the user to that web page and say, hey, do you want to give the app access? Or in, say, a web application, they'll just do a redirect or do a pop-up or something like that. If the user's not already signed in, they'll have to sign in first, and then they'll have to say, yes, I want to give the app access. And when they say, yes, I want to give the app access, you get back what's called an authorization code. And that authorization code basically represents, yep, the user said it's good. They want this application to be able to access their data. The application goes back to this token endpoint and says, hey, I have this code. The user said it was OK for me to access their data. Can you give me the token that represents that? And then Azure Active Directory's token endpoint returns that access token and a refresh token so you can continue to get access. And then you turn around and make the call to the REST API. You take that access token and say, hey, I want to get the user's email or I want to get the user's files in their OneDrive. And the one thing that's slightly different from the other OAuth flows that are out there is that in most OAuth flows, there's sort of one authorization server to one service. So you don't really have to tell anybody about which service you're actually going to go call. In this case, when you go to that token endpoint, you have to say, hey, Azure AD, here's the resource that I want to get access to, meaning like here's the specific Office 365 API I want to access. Like I want to access Exchange, or I want to access SharePoint, or I want to access Azure Active Directory. And that will be embedded in the access token. So we call this, sometimes you'll hear people call this a multi-resource refresh token, because you get access once, you have one consent, but you can get access to multiple different resources with that one refresh token. Okay, so you have to remember all this, we're actually going to go through it, but please keep in mind the authorization endpoint and the token endpoint, because we're going to see those in just a minute. All right, so I'm going to go ahead and switch over and start some demos. And I'm actually going to start. I'm in my Office 365 admin portal. For those of you guys who haven't seen it before, this is what the admin portal looks like in Office 365. It's just a summary. If I go and check out, say, users here, I can see the active users. I can go and manage my groups. These are actually users that are stored inside of Azure Active Directory. When you go and get an Office 365 tenant, when you sign up for Office 365, we go and create an Azure Active Directory tenant automatically behind the scenes. We don't really tell you about it, and you can do most of your management stuff from within the Office portal, so you don't ever really have to know. Well, there is actually an Azure Active Directory tenant. And if you go to Azure Active Directory's portal, so I'm just logged in with that same tenant administrator into the Azure Active Directory portal, I can see all of my different Azure resources here, including a directory called Rob's Developer Tenant. And that directory, that tenant name is the same as my Office 365 tenant name. And that's because it's actually the same tenant. I'm basically just seeing the Azure view of this same tenant. If I click on users here, I can see this list of users here. If I click on users inside of Azure Active Directory, I'll get the same list of users here. And if I create a user in one, I can see them in the other and vice versa. So just think of, I've got Azure Active Directory. It's all the identity infrastructure that's actually underlying Office 365. It's the same tenant. I can do the management of users and groups from within this portal. You can see that along the management here. There's not yet a way within the Office portal to manage applications. So when you do that, you're going to go into Azure Active Directory. And you can see I've got a Users tab, I've got a Groups tab, and I've got an Applications tab. I'm going to go ahead and click on that. And when you come here the first time, when you log in and you get an Azure subscription if you don't already have one, and you take a look at this for the first time for an Office 365 tenant, you're actually going to see just two applications. It'll be Office 365 Exchange Online and Office 365 SharePoint Online. You'll see the publisher is actually Microsoft Corporation. And that's because SharePoint and Exchange are both modeled as applications the same way that your custom applications are modeled. In fact, you can do all of the same stuff we're doing about exposing permissions and doing service-to-service communication for your own custom applications using the same features in Azure Active Directory. So when you have an Office 365 tenant, you'll see those in there by default. But you can, of course, go and create some new ones. So we're going to create a new application. I'm going to say add an application my organization is developing. And I can choose whether I want a web application, like a website or a web API, or if I want a native client application. I'm going to choose the web application because I have to put in a couple more pieces of information for that, so you'll be able to see that. I'm going to call this made-up website demo and go to next. You'll see there are a couple properties I have to put in there. The first is a sign-on URL, which is basically the URL where people are actually going to use my application. And I'm going to go to http://madeupwebsite.com, which, believe it or not, doesn't actually exist. Nobody has registered madeupwebsite.com. I don't know why. I'm going to go and register as soon as I'm done. And then you have to have an App ID URI. And the App ID URI is a little bit tricky. Basically, the two things you need to know are it needs to be unique, and it needs to be a verified domain. And I don't know if you've ever verified a domain in Azure Active Directory. It can be a little bit of a painful process. So if you're not doing that otherwise, you actually get one for free that is just part of your tenant. So my tenant's name is Junction. That's like my users are rob@junction.onmicrosoft.com. So if I just type that in, junction.onmicrosoft.com as the base URL, I'll actually be able to use that because it's already a verified domain. And then I just have to make sure it's unique. So I'm going to say made up website. And just in case, I'm going to say 139, just to make sure it's really unique. And I'm going to hit OK. It's going to go and provision that application. So now I've registered a new application in Azure Active Directory. And if I go to the Configure tab, you can see all of the properties for this application. You can see the display name. You can see that sign-on URL we typed in. I can update a logo if I want it to have a different logo than the default one. You can see this application is multi-tenant, which I'll come back to in just a minute. I'm going to keep it as no because I actually want to show you an error. And then I'll see the client ID, which is the sort of identifier for this application. This is the ID that uniquely identifies this application in the world. And it's the same as the client ID in OAuth, if you're familiar with that. That's the way that the application's identified. I can see keys. So if I want to create passwords for my application, which is required for OAuth, I can create them here. I can choose that they're good for 1 or 2 years. And you'll see that you don't actually get them until you hit save. And then once you hit save, you only get to see them for that one brief period of time. So you have to save them off somewhere and not forget. Otherwise, you'll never be able to see them again. But you can add more if you need to. So. You can see the App ID URI and the reply URL, which we saw before. But then there's the most interesting part to me down at the bottom, which is permissions to other applications. So this is where I tell Azure, hey, here are the different applications that I want access to, and here's the permissions that I want on them. By default, Windows Azure Active Directory is chosen, and a permission called enable single sign-on and read users profiles is there. So this is what tells me that I can do the single sign-on flow. But you can also see applications like Exchange Online, and I can see permissions like I want full control of their contacts and their calendars. I want to send mail as a user, read and write access to their mail. And you can see SharePoint Online, and you can see a bunch of permissions related to the user's files in OneDrive for Business or different items and files in their site collections. So I'm going to check a few of those, and I'm going to go ahead and hit save. And it's going to go ahead and update the application to now say, oh, here are all the different permissions that this application wants. So now my application is basically configured, did it manually through Azure Active Directory, and I want to actually go through that OAuth flow for you and show you all the different requests that were in that diagram. There's a handy little tool here at the bottom. If I click View Endpoints, you can see all the different endpoints for this application. There are a bunch of things that we don't care about. We're not doing WSFed or SAMLP or we're not calling the Graph API right now. But the two at the bottom, the OAuth2 token endpoint and the OAuth2 authorization endpoint, hopefully those sound familiar. Those were the two middle bars in our diagram. So you can take those guys from here. I've also got a little notepad here where I've got some kind of templates for the ones that I'm expecting to use. You'll see that the two endpoints are login.windows.net/common/oauth2/authorize for the authorization endpoint, and the same URL with /token for the token endpoint. some pretty straightforward URLs. And then I'm going to put a couple of parameters in there. One is the redirect URI. And the redirect URI is the website where I want you to send the code back after the user says, yes, I want to give you access. The response type is always going to be code in our case. We're just saying, what do we want back? And we want back that authorization code. And the last thing I have to add in here is the client ID that Azure Active Directory just gave me. So I'm going to go back there and copy. And I'm just going to paste it in there. And then I'm going to take this whole URL. Remember I said, really, you're just going to send a user to this website. So we're actually just going to go into in private mode because I want to log in as a different user. And we're just going to browse to that website. You'll see the first thing it's going to have me do is it's going to have me sign on because it doesn't know who I am. I'm an in private browser. If I were already signed on, I probably wouldn't see this. But I'm going to sign on actually with a different tenant. So the last stuff we've been doing was in Rob's developer tenant, which is Junction. And this is Rob's customer tenant, which is Junction 2. I've got two different tenants, so I can kind of test out the cross-tenant stuff. And I'm going to sign in. When I sign in, you'll see I get an error. And I'm showing you this on purpose because it's really easy when you go through this to get something wrong here or there, to miss a parameter or to specify a parameter wrong. It happens all the time. I'll probably do it at least one more time during the demo. And the nice thing is that if you know where to look, they actually have really nice error messages. So right up here, this isn't very useful. Sorry, but we're having trouble signing in. We received a bad request. But down at the bottom, you can see that there's a message that people miss a lot of times that they don't see. And it's telling you, here's what the problem is. In this case, it says, application with identifier this, that client ID I just put in, was not found in directory junction2.onmicrosoft.com. Does anybody know why? There's that multi-tenant checkbox that I had there. Let's go back and take a look at that. When I'm inside Azure Active Directory, I can decide whether I want my application to be multi-tenant or not. And I left it as no. And what that means is that nobody from outside of my directory can actually use this application. And this is exactly what you want if you're building, say, an internal corporate application. But if you're an ISV or you just want anybody to be able to use your application, you need to flip this over to multi-tenant. So I'm going to hit yes. And then I'm going to hit save. One thing to know is that when you write this new setting to Azure Active Directory, it can take like 30 seconds sometime for it to propagate. So if you do this and you still get that same error, you just browse again one more time, basically. So I'm going to go back, and we're going to try and paste that in and see if it's propagated. Oh. I actually already have. Try one more time. There we go. OK, so now we got that setting through. It updated the app to be multi-tenant, so it was able to find this application now. You can see it's telling me, here's the name of the application, and here's the website where it's published. OAuth actually will bind you strongly to that website. When it sends the code, it's going to send it to that website. So this is an important part of the security. Do I trust madeupwebsite.com? It's going to tell me all the permissions that I asked for, edit or delete your files, have full access to your contacts. You can mouse over to get a little bit more detail on what that means. It tells me who I'm signed in as, Rob at Junction 2. I can even do more details to see which organization I'm in. So my organization is Rob's customer tenant. The app is published by Rob's developer tenant. And I then get to decide, hey, do I actually trust this application or not? So if I hit no thanks, it'll redirect back to the application with an error. But in this case, it's actually going to redirect back. Remember that authorization code that we talked about. When I hit OK, it's going to create that authorization code, and it's going to redirect back to madeupwebsite.com. Now, madeupwebsite.com doesn't actually exist. So if I did that, I'd just get a DNS error. But it doesn't matter. We're actually going to use a tool called Fiddler. How many people have used Fiddler before? Oh, awesome. Almost all of you. So if you haven't used Fiddler, it's at fiddler2.com. Really awesome tool for monitoring network traffic, looking at requests and responses, even constructing them. And we're going to use it here. I've got Fiddler. Essentially, the idea is that it monitors requests, and they come into this left-hand side here. And then you can look at the requests in your inspectors on the right-hand side. I'm not capturing right now. I'm going to turn on the capturing for just a second. There's a lot of noise coming from like the portal and a bunch of other things, so I don't want it on too long. And I'm going to hit OK, and we should see an error. Yeah, so we saw an error. This looks like an IP error. There's a reserved domain. Now, somebody went out and reserved this domain in the time period that I was waiting here. But you can see it's not actually loading the website, but you can see in the request there is the code here in the query string. I don't know if you guys can see that, but here's the in the query string code equals and this long base64 encoded string, and that's the authorization code. So I'm going to go back to Fiddler, and I'm going to stop capturing. I'll get rid of all the extra cruft so you can see the ones that we care about. Basically, what we care about is this madeupwebsite.com request. And you can see if we go to the inspector, so this is showing me the request information at the top and the response information at the bottom. If I flip over to the web forms inspector, I can see all the parameters that were sent as part of this request. And you can see that authorization code that was sent to this website. So if I actually had a website running there, I would have a page that was expecting to get a code. And when it gets the code, it would then turn around and go to that access token endpoint and get back an access token. So we don't really have a website there, so we're just going to do that manually. There's another tool in Fiddler, in addition to the inspector, is called the Composer. It's also a really cool tool. It helps you create web requests from scratch. So I'm going to go to the Composer. And I've got some more URLs here. I'm just going to take that token endpoint. It's the same as the authorization endpoint, just /token. And I'm going to use that as the request URL. Instead of doing a get request, because I'm not asking for information from them, I'm going to do a post request, because I want to post them a bunch of information, like the auth code and a bunch of things like that. So I'm going to switch get to post. And then I have to tell it what the type of the content is. So I'm going to give a content type header and just tell it that this is URL encoded form content. And then I'm going to go get my URL encoded form content. And what this is, it basically looks like a query string or a URL encoded form. And it's got a bunch of different parameters in there. The first one is grant type. So this is saying, hey, when I'm asking for a token, what grant am I showing you? What proof that the user granted me access am I showing you? And I can show you a refresh token if I'm giving you a refresh token, or I can give an authorization code in this case, which is what I'm giving. I have to give you the redirect URI, which is just to make sure that this was really the code sent to the right redirect URI. They're going to match that against the one they sent the code to, and they're going to make sure that they match up. The next is the client ID, and we know that one. If we go back to the portal, we can copy the client ID out and paste that in there. After that is the client secret. Client secret is also here. It's that key that I created. I'm going to copy it. There's one little hang up with the client ID, which is that I have to encode it. So just going to do a quick URL encoding in a little browser tool and paste that into the client secret. Then I have to go get that code that I was sent. So I'm going to go back to the inspector and copy the code and go back to Composer and paste the code. And then the last parameter is the resource that I want to call. So remember I said when you go get the token, you have to tell it, do I want to talk to Exchange or SharePoint or Azure Active Directory? And the way that you tell it is you basically give it the domain name of the URL that you're going to go call that service on. So the Exchange web services are on outlook.office365.com. So I'm just going to type in https://outlook.office365.com. And that'll tell it, hey, I want to access the Exchange web service, and it'll go get a token for that. So if I did everything right, everybody cross your fingers, I hit execute. You can see a new request came down in here. It's got a 200 status, which is a good sign. If I go to the inspectors, you can see in the request part, you can see all the stuff that I just put in the body, just printed nicer. And if I go and look at the raw response, you can see a bunch of headers. From the bottom, you'll see a bunch of JSON down here, which is what the response comes back as. There's a JSON response. Luckily, Fiddler has a nice JSON viewer, so I'll switch to that. And there it is. You can see the access token inside the response. It's another base64 encoded string. Just a few other things to point out here. You also get some information on how long until this token expires. Access tokens expire about an hour after you get them, apparently 1 second less than an hour. I'm not sure why it's always 1 second less than an hour, but 1 second less than an hour. And those access tokens, you can refresh them. You can get a new one without having to ask the user anything by using this one down here called the refresh token. And you basically just send it the same way I just sent the auth code. It's just in the grant type you say refresh token instead of authorization code. And then just a couple more things. You'll see here's the resource that this token is good for, outlook.office365.com. The scope is telling me what are the permissions that this token gives me on that resource. And those are the ones that I asked for, things like calendars write, contacts write, mail send, mail write. And the last one is an ID token. If you're familiar with OpenID Connect, this is a way that I can get information about who the user is. It'll tell me here's the user's username and their display name, and I can call back into the directory to get more information about them. But it's basically a quick ID token that lets me know if I've seen this user before or not. Anyway, so long story short, I got the access token, which is what I really care about. And I'm going to go and just do a couple quick requests to go to Exchange and show you a couple of API requests before we go on and go into more detail there, just to prove that this sort of worked end to end. And I'll go back here. I'm logged in as that second Junction 2 user. I'm going to go back to their OA just so you can see things as I'm doing the requests. So it's going to sign me in, and I'm going to go to Fiddler. I'm actually going to make this full screen because that's really small to do Fiddler work. I'm going to take the access token and I'm going to copy it. One thing that I always get wrong is if you copy it from this view, notice it's copying the access token equals part. So we have to remember to remove that before we hit go. I mess that one up all the time. So I'm going to go to Composer, and this time I'm going to do a GET request, and I'm going to go to that outlook.office365.com. And the OData web services are /API/v.10. And then I can do, for example, a request to /me. I could go to some other user's mailbox, but in this case, I'm just going to go to the currently authenticated user's mailbox. And I have to give that access token. The way I do that is I use an authorization header, and I type in the string bearer. It's part of the OAuth spec. You always type in bearer to say this is a bearer token, and then space and put the access token, and then have to remember, go and delete this access token equals part. And then I just hit execute. And if I did everything right, this may take just a second. This tenant's back in the United States, so it's got a long way to go, and we'll see how fast the Wi-Fi is. If I did everything right, I'll get a response back that will tell me just a little bit of basic information about the current user. That's what the /me will do. It'll give me that user's mailbox information. I can use that to get information about what other resources are available there. Oh, there we go. So we got a 200, so I'll click on that. If I go to inspectors, again, these are JSON web services, so I'll just stay in the JSON viewer so you can see the response. I'm just getting back just who is the current user. I can see the display name. I can see the ID. I can see an alias. I can see their mailbox GUID. So not that much interesting on the user. But then I can do stuff like I can go /calendars and get the user's calendars. And if I look at that inspector, I can see, oh, this user only has one calendar. Here's some information about the ID of that calendar, the change key, things like that. If I want to get the events on their default calendar, it's just /events. And I can hit execute, and I'll get back a JSON view of all of the different events that are inside of that user's calendar. You can see a bunch of different fields like the location, the organizer, the subject, the start and the end time. So really simple, straightforward properties, really simple, straightforward URLs for accessing this. And then, of course, this isn't just a read API. I can write stuff back. So I'm going to switch over. If you're not familiar with REST, GET in HTTP for REST APIs usually means get me the information about the thing in the URL. POST usually means, hey, I want to add something to whatever's in the URL. So if I'm posting to the events collection, that means I'm adding a new event to this user's set of events. So I'm going to POST. Again, whenever you do a POST, you have to tell it what the content type is so it knows how to interpret the request. And again, we're going to use JSON, so application/JSON. It's really nice, simple. I just post some JavaScript objects and it understands them. I'm going to go over here so you can actually see me do it. See if I can get you a view of the actual day so you can actually see it. There we go. Okay, so I'm on October 30th, so I want to create an event for there. So I just go, like I said, I'm going to post some JSON. So I open up the JSON object, and it's as simple as saying, okay, here's a subject, and we'll call this presenting. Then I'm going to do the start time, and that'll be something like 2014, 10, 30. See, here's the confusing thing, because this This OWA user is on Redmond time, and so it's 1 a.m., and this is going to be, what is this going to be? I think it's 7 UTC time, Z. And then we give it the end, and we'll end at 8. Not sure if this is actually right, but it's close enough to the right time that it should show up. So I just hit execute. I just do a simple JSON object. I post it to the events collection. I hit execute with my access token. It should just take a second, and then it will come back with a 201. So a 200 means success. A 201 means created. And there you can see it pop up presenting. I got an hour back, but close enough. So pretty cool. We did the entire flow. So we actually started from scratch with no application. We created a new application from scratch. We did a bunch of stuff in the authorization endpoint. We created a bunch of requests in Fiddler. We got access tokens, and we used the API. So we did the whole thing from scratch, no tools, nothing. So give yourselves a round of applause. That was a good one. Awesome. So we did the really simple part. That's the hardest part. That's all the stuff that's going on behind the scenes. Now you know everything there is to know, all the difficult stuff. Now we're going to show a bunch of other things, a bunch of extra tools and things like that that make life a lot easier than having to do all those things every time you want to create an application. But now you know how it works. So let's go back to the slides, and I want to talk about another couple things that are also helpful. So we did our Azure AD demo. If we go back and think about these examples, and I talked about a bunch of things that was wrong with them, we kind of covered all of the auth stuff, the username and password things. We didn't yet talk about how you figure out what URL to use for, say, the SharePoint site, or how you know that outlook.office365.com is the Exchange URL, and a bunch of other URLs that are part of this, how you figure out what all those URLs are. And the way you do that is with a new service we call the Discovery Service. And this is a service that's a static service that will say, hey, the user already told you that you can have access to their mail or their files or their calendar. And you shouldn't have to ask them where it is. We should just be able to tell you if you have access to that. So it allows you to take that same access token, and I said, oh, you can call Exchange, you can call SharePoint, you can call Azure Active Directory. The Discovery Service is just a different service that you can call and say, here's the access token that proves that I have access. Can you tell me where all those things are so I don't have to ask the end user? And it uses that same Azure Active Directory authentication flow. It works, again, for device apps and websites. And all of that information is being pulled from the secure stores inside of Azure Active Directory that's telling you where that user's services are. So I'm going to go back and just show a really quick demo of an application. See, I'm using my snazzy new Windows 10 multi-desktop display thing. I've got a really simple application. This is a Win8 application or a universal app. I'm going to launch this application, and it's a really simple, as soon as it's done deploying, it's a really simple example application that's going to show you kind of how Discovery works and what it does, just for the purpose of showing you. Still coming. Let's try that again. Okay. Bear with me just a second. Try and redeploy it. And run it. Element not found. Discovery Win 8. I'm actually not sure what's wrong. I've never seen that before. Anybody know? No? Temporary key? don't know, it was working 5 minutes ago. Maybe it expired. Release build. Oh, fail. Okay, well, I'm not going to show you discovery. The quick version of discovery. I'll show you in Fiddler instead. We'll try and show you in Fiddler. Okay, I apologize in advance if this doesn't work. We have to do it on the fly now, so we'll do everything in Fiddler today. Okay. So I'm going to go back, and I'm going to get an access token for discovery. If we go here, we're on the access token endpoint. So this is that request to the token endpoint. There's another cool feature in Fiddler. I can do replay, reissue from Composer. And it'll actually just take that request, and it'll put it inside of the Composer as it was. And I can go and modify it. So I'm going to go back and say, oh, I don't want an authorization code anymore. I'm going to use the refresh token. So you can see I can do this with a refresh token. I'm going to go find the code part, and I'm going to take the code out. And I'm going to replace that with a refresh token. And I'm going to go back into the inspector and copy out the refresh token. And go back to the composer. It's already got refresh token equals in there. I paste right. Refresh token equals, okay. And then the resource for discovery is api.office.com/discovery. I think I haven't practiced this part, so I don't know. I'm going to hit execute. I get back an access token, so that looks good. I'm going to copy it, and I'm going to do one more request to https://api.office.com/discovery/me/services and put in that bearer token. And I have to remember to take this access token off. And hit execute, and I get a 401. Okay. Well, wish my Windows 8 application worked. I apologize about that. I'm not sure why it won't deploy. Maybe we'll be able to figure it out and show it to you afterwards. If you come by the booth, the Office Developer booth, I can definitely show it to you there. It does basically this flow. It allows you to go get the access token for discovery, take that access token, make a request to api.office.com, and then once you make the request to api.office.com, it gives you back a list of the service endpoints where all those things are. So I'd see junction2-my.sharepoint.com/personal/, you know, the whole long thing about my SharePoint URL for files. I'd see Outlook. I'd see Exchange for the mail, calendar, and contact services that I have. And then I'd be able to make requests to those services based on the information I get back. Okay. So let's go back. All right, the last piece that we're going to talk about, so we talked about authentication, authorization, we got our tokens. We then used the discovery service, or tried to use the discovery service in order to figure out where the URLs are. We haven't talked too much about the APIs themselves yet. So the APIs are all the things that give you the power of Office inside of your custom applications. They're very simple REST URLs. You saw before the things like API v1.0, then me/events and me/calendars. You saw really simple JSON requests and response. These are very simple and standard REST APIs. They comply with OData v4, which is a W3C open standard. It allows you to do a little bit of structure on top of REST. But if you don't understand OData, it's really just REST, and you don't have to understand anything more about it than that. Today, it allows you to get to files, lists, mail, calendar, and people and groups inside of Office 365. Those are the services for SharePoint, Exchange, and Azure Active Directory. We're obviously adding more and more. I think if you were in Brian's session earlier, he was talking about the roadmap of additional services we want to continue to add, how we want to put these all on a single domain in the future. Today, they support that same Azure Active Directory OAuth flow we saw, and they're all available through the Discovery service. So you can ask for the URLs through Discovery to figure out exactly where those URLs are. In terms of the APIs themselves, I'm going to give you a quick summary. This is really more for you to actually go back and look at for reference. But we got the Files APIs, which allow you to get to files, folders, and drive objects. The drive object is just an object that tells you things like what's the quota, how much storage is there, how much has been deleted, what's remaining. And those requests are all based on the SharePoint URL. And you'll have underscore API to get into the SharePoint REST URL space. And then we have a version. All of the APIs that are released now are V1.0 for Exchange and for SharePoint. And you'll see that familiar little me segment, which means the currently authenticated user, slash files means give me their files. And then I can do things like access a file by an ID, or access a file, I can say what the path is. So this would give me the metadata for the file within a folder called folder name for a file called filename.foo. So a couple of simple requests there. Then I've got calendar, which allows me to get to calendar groups. You can have multiple calendars, and you can put them inside of groups in Exchange and all kinds of complicated situations there. You can also just say, I want to get to the default calendar, which is where most people's stuff is. And on those calendars, you can get to events and do things like read, write, update, delete those events. You can accept them. You can decline them. You can check for their current status, all kinds of stuff like that. And then you can interact with attachments. You can see a couple of examples here. This gets the current user's calendars, and this gets the first five events. This dollar top parameter is a NoData parameter that works on almost all these services where you say, I just want the first five, and then you get a continuation response. Then we've got mail. Mail supports all the folders in your mailbox, supports messages inside of those folders and attachments on those. For messages, it's very full-featured, everything like copy, move, reply, reply all, forward, send, create, reply all, create, forward, all the things that you would sort of expect to be able to do in a mail client, you can do from this service as well. And you can see a couple of example requests down here. There's me slash folders slash inbox slash messages. You have a simple API for sending new mails, so all that's available inside of mail. And then contacts. And contacts is pretty simple. You just have contact folders and then contacts within those. And you can create, read, update, and delete those contacts inside those contacts folders. One nice thing about OData, these are REST services, but they also support OData. And one nice thing about that is there's some standard query semantics that you can do on top of them. So you can take, say, me slash messages, which is going to give you the current user's inbox messages. It'll sort of default to grab you the inbox. And you can add on this query string parameter $top equals 5 to say, I just want the first five messages from the inbox. And then you can also use a parameter called skip, which will say, OK, give me the next five. So this next one that says get the next 10 messages would say skip the first five and then get me the next 10. And then you can also use a parameter called order by, which says this is the field that I'd like you to order those results by, or select. $select, which is then a comma delimited list of, hey, I only want these fields back. I don't need all the other fields, so don't make the response any bigger than it needs to be. There's $filter to say, oh, I only want events that start before this particular date time. And you can also use the contains operator. So you can say, I want you to get me back all of the contacts where the display name contains Rob. And these are OData semantics that are pretty common across all OData services. They're not all supported for every single property. So for example, if you want to use $filter, there's certain parameters inside of Exchange that aren't indexed parameters. And so if we let you do a $filter on those, it would take a really long time in order to get a response back. And so instead, you'll get an error that says that's an unsupported query. And if you needed to do a filter, you'd have to do that on the client side. So if you encounter something that you really want to be able to do a filter on this, and you're not able to do it, please give us that feedback. And then there's just a bunch of examples in here around the Files API. Again, this is mostly for you to refer back to later, but I'll just go through them really quickly. The first one is just underscore API slash V10 slash me slash files, which is just going to get all the files, the metadata for all the files at the root of the OneDrive. You can then reference those individual files by specifying a file ID, or by doing git by path. So if you want to specify instead of an immutable ID, you want to specify the actual path in the file name, you can do it that way as well. The nice thing about the mutable ID is that if you rename the file or if you move it, the ID doesn't change, so you can still refer to it between requests. And then, regardless of whether you choose the file ID or you choose git by path, all the other things are available. So if you want to download a file, you just refer to the file and do a git on /content. If you want to get the root folder of the current user's OneDrive, it's just files/root. If you want to get the children of a folder, it's just the folder/children. So pretty simple, straightforward things. You can do an upload by doing a put to the /content for the file's name. You can do a delete with a delete verb. You can do a get and use all those OData query parameters we were talking about, select and top. And then, of course, we've got the ability to copy a file as well. You can post to copy and then pass in the information about the folder you want to reference. So again, this is just to refer back to later. The one thing that I will point you to in the very near term is with these new APIs, we also released a new refresh of the documentation. So if you go to aka.ms/office365dev-apis, I'm just going to go there real quick just to show you a couple things. There's actually a big refresh of our REST API documentation. We've historically had pretty bad REST API documentation, and this is a big, big focus for us to improve these things. We think this is a big step forward from what we've had before, so we'd love to get your feedback on it. There's still a lot of things that we can continue to improve on, but we think it's a lot better. So you can come to this page. This will give you the overview, but if you want the REST API reference, you can click on that. And I can jump into any of these APIs. I'll go, for example, to the files REST API. And you'll see kind of an overview at the front. But on the right-hand side, you'll see all kinds of different operations and very detailed documentation on that operation. So for example, I can see git folder properties. I can see exactly how that URL works. I can see a sample request and response. I can even hit try, and it will actually, within the browser, run a request against a sample tenant. I don't even have to sign up in order to try these APIs in order to get information on that. And I can do things like list the folder contents and hit try on that. I'll get back, say, an ID for one of the files inside of there. I can copy that, and I can say go to git file properties and paste that in and try that on the file properties. And then I get those file properties. So I've got a nice little interactive API explorer. I can see exact requests and responses for all these APIs. And that's available for files, mail, calendar, contacts, for all the things that we've been talking about today, for all of these different operations. So do let us know how this works for you guys. Let us know how you find it. We'd love to hear your feedback, both positive and negative. And I'll give you a link at the end about all the places that we're listening for feedback when you do want to provide that. But this is a great place to go and get all the details about every last API and what they support. And I definitely recommend checking that out for the details on the APIs. One other thing that I would like to point out is a lot of you guys may have actually worked developing against SharePoint in the past. Anybody do SharePoint development? Awesome. So in SharePoint, we've got the client-side object model, and we've got the REST APIs in SharePoint. In addition to the new files API, we've got things for getting at lists, we've got things for getting at taxonomy, we've got things for getting at search. And all of those APIs are available through client APIs, through a bunch of client object model pieces we have and REST that we have right now. And you pass in this sort of SharePoint-specific access token to that. The good news is that none of that stuff is going away. We're not replacing that or removing that. And that actually just fits in as another one of these APIs. So we've got Azure Active Directory, we've got Exchange and Outlook.com, we've got Files and Sites. And those client APIs are just another API that you can pass these same access tokens to. So you can use this new Azure AD-based OAuth to access lists and libraries and things like that inside of SharePoint. So you don't have to get rid of any client object model code or migrate off of client object model in order to use the access tokens that you get from the new pieces as well. Okay. So we talked about the APIs, we talked about discovery, we talked about auth. Now I told you that there were a bunch of tools that you can use in order to make your life a lot easier, so you don't have to do all this stuff manually. And the first one that we'll talk about is the Office 365 SDK for Android. We actually released the Office 365 SDK for Android in preview in March when we started previewing the APIs. We've got a new refresh that dropped at the beginning of this week. That's a brand new version of the Office 365 SDK for Android. It's an open source project on GitHub in the Office Dev organization, so you can check it out, you can contribute to it, you can make pull requests, you can fork it, you can go and clone it, and there's a bunch of sample applications inside of there. One of the really cool things about the Office 365 SDK for Android is that in addition to just an SDK, it actually comes along with some tools as well. So for those of you guys who have developed for Android, there's a couple different choices for tools. There's Eclipse and Android Studio and the Android add-ins inside of Eclipse. There's also Android Studio, which is built on IntelliJ. And we've actually got an add-in that will work in those tools to allow you to integrate with Office 365 really quickly. So if I'm, say, for example, in Android Studio, and I want to add a new activity, so I'll open up source and go to main, and add a new activity. I've got this add-in installed. I've got the plugin for Android installed. It's called the MS Open Tech Tools plugin. That's the Open Technologies open source subsidiary of Microsoft. They produce this tool, and the tool itself is open tech or is open source. And I can click to add an Office 365 activity. It'll ask me what SDKs I want to use. So I can say I want Outlook services or file services or SharePoint lists, and I can hit finish. It'll go and automatically get the latest versions of those SDKs for me. And then my favorite part is it will actually automatically connect to Azure Active Directory for me based on my developer account. And it'll let me pick which application I'd like to use inside of this project, or go ahead and create a new application using the name and the reply URL from within the tools and wire that up to my project automatically. So I can do all that picking of permissions and wire up the client ID and the redirect URI and all those things that we did manually from within this tool inside of Android Studio. So that makes it a whole lot easier to do all of those requests and responses and wire up OAuth and make all the requests than it would be otherwise. And then, of course, I get the SDKs as well, which give me, you know, typed experiences for getting at all the functionality in those REST APIs. I don't necessarily have to know all the REST APIs. I'll get IntelliSense inside of Android Studio to see all of the functionality available through those Android SDKs. In terms of the SDK roadmap, the Android SDK you should think of as one of many of them. We actually released at the beginning of the week also an iOS SDK. So if you want to create native iOS devices or device applications, you can call Office 365 really seamlessly from that. We don't yet have tooling for Xcode. Xcode's a little bit harder to plug into than Android Studio, but that's certainly something we want to make better in the future. We've also got SDKs for .NET, and we support almost every sort of .NET project at this point, even things like Xamarin for cross-device development. And we've got a JavaScript SDK for use in Cordova. So if you want to create Cordova projects that target different device applications, you can use an Office 365 SDK for that as well. And we're going to continue to add more and more of these SDKs for additional web and device platforms, sort of in popularity order. If there's one that we're missing that you really want us to have, give us that feedback on User Voice. You'll see the link at the end of this. We are going to also keep them up to date very quickly, though. Because we use OData, we can actually generate these SDKs, or at least the basic part of the SDKs, very quickly. And so as soon as we add new features, you should expect the SDKs to get updated to include those features very quickly as well. And all of these SDKs will go in the Office Dev organization on GitHub. You can use them as open source projects. You can contribute to them. You can fix bugs in them if you find bugs. You can report bugs if you find bugs. And of course, we'll take submissions to the community if you want to add new things to the SDKs. Okay, so we talked about Android and iOS and all that stuff. Of course, we also really love .NET. We love Visual Studio tools. One thing that I really learned about Visual Studio after using a bunch of Android tools is that, man, we have it really good with Visual Studio. It's a really nicely built tool, and we have an add-in for Visual Studio, an extension for Visual Studio called the Office 365 API tools. And these Office 365 API tools are available today. You can go to dev.office.com to download them. You can actually search for them directly from within Visual Studio. I'll show you where they are in just a second when I do that demo. And you can download the Office 365 API tool. And that really, that API tool makes it very seamless to integrate Office 365 APIs into any sort of project inside Visual Studio. When I say any sort of project, there should be a little bit of asterisk, but it's a long list. Your .NET Windows Store applications, even Windows Forms applications or WPF applications, you can create a command line app, and you can use the O365 API tools to add in Office 365 API support for your command line app. ASP.NET MVC, web forms applications, Xamarin, Android and iOS applications, and Cordova applications for multi-device development. So we've got support for a bunch of different project types. So this is no longer, hey, there's a template for creating an Office 365 kind of an app. It's you create whatever type of app you'd like, and you add the Office 365 services to it. I'll show you this, so I don't need to talk through that. And I'm actually going to go in and demo those O365 API tools for VS now. I'm going to switch over here. There's on the Office Dev organization, if you haven't checked out the Office Dev organization on GitHub, there are a ton of great samples up there. Almost all of our sample code, almost all of our sample demos and projects are up there. And there's one up there that Chucks, a guy from the Office 365 VS tools team, built for doing an O365 web app with multi-tenant support. I would clone it, but when I was cloning it earlier this week, earlier this morning, it was actually taking like 5 minutes to pull down the whole repository from over the ocean. So I already have it cloned down here, but you can easily go to GitHub. I've actually got the URL up here. You can see on the Office Dev organization, here's the O365 web app multi-tenant. It's just an ASP.NET MVC app that's been wired up, and he's got some sample code in there for doing SSO. You can go ahead and grab the Git URL, and you can go into your web application and just clone and paste in that Git URL. And if you hit clone, it'll download everything you need inside of a new project, and you can just go ahead and open it up. So I've got this project already open here. And I basically took the exact thing that was cloned. The only thing that I've done is I've sort of rehydrated the NuGet packages. You can go and manage your NuGet packages and rehydrate them. Otherwise, it'll do it automatically when you build. And I'm just going to go and show you the new tools. Actually, just to show you how to get them, if you go to Tools, Extensions, and Updates, you can search online for Office 365. And in the gallery, the first result should be Microsoft Office 365 API tools, and you can just install it directly from within the tool. And what that does is now inside of my projects, if I go right-click and I go Add, you'll see a connected service option there. And Office 365 will be one of the options for your connected services. Depending on the project type, there may be other ones too, Azure Mobile Services, things like that. And from within here, I can click Register Your Application. If I weren't already signed in with my developer account, I would just have to sign in with whatever account I want to develop. And what it actually did was it automatically went to the Azure Management Portal through the Graph APIs, and it created a new application there. It took the client ID and the client secret and put it inside my web config. And now it's going to let me do things like go to the permissions and say, here are the permissions that I want, and it'll update my application's registration in Visual Studio to get all these permissions. It'll go to My Files. And then the last one I want is enable single sign-on read users profiles. So I just want a bunch of different permissions here because I'm going to show you a bunch of different demos of API requests as I do this. So I'm going to hit OK. So it already did the application registration. It already added the ID and secret into my web config. Now it's going and getting all the NuGet packages for the SDKs that I need in order to call those services. So it's setting all that stuff up for me automatically. I can see them sort of get added to my application as I go. And then it'll pop me directly into that documentation that we were looking at earlier, this refresh documentation with step-by-step instructions for how I actually add these into my projects and code samples for adding them into the project as well. So if I go to solution, just to prove to you that it's got that web config, you can see here's my client ID and my password. Those were created for me automatically when I registered inside of the portal. Remember, I did that manually earlier. This is automatically done for you inside of the tools. And what I'm going to do is I'm actually going to go and add a new controller. We're going to create this one pretty quick here. Add a controller. And this is going to be a bunch of sample requests for O365 APIs. I'm just going to build a website that has a bunch of sample requests in it. So I'm going to call my controller O365 Sample Controller. For those of you who aren't familiar with ASP.NET MVC, a controller is basically just a piece of code that handles it when you make a request to a specific URL. So if I make a request to my web application / O365 sample, it's going to get routed to this particular controller. And if I go to O365 sample controller, I added it the wrong kind. Let me add a blank one. O365 sample controller, delete, add controller, empty controller. Somehow I hit. But I wanted a bunch of stuff in there. So I have an empty controller. And this is the index method, which is just going to be the root of that. So if I just do get on O365 sample, this is what's going to get invoked. What I want is I want a bunch of different API requests that you can kind of browse through. So I'm going to create a quick model, O365 APIs. I have a service type enum. And then the model for these samples is just going to be a class that has a bunch of different properties about each of the demos. So it's got a service type, whether it's going to call SharePoint or Exchange. If there's a content type for the request, what is the content type? What's the description of this demo? What HTTP method is it going to use? What's the pattern of the URL? All these sorts of things are part of the model. And then I'm going to dump in an array that has all of those requests. So we'll dump in the actual data itself. And you can see this is just an array that has a bunch of instances of the model. And you can see stuff like, oh, this is a demo that's sending an email to Rob's demo account. The request URL pattern is /me/sendmail. And that first part, the curly braces, we're just going to use discovery to replace that with the discovered URL for Outlook. You can see the HTTP method is post. You can see the service endpoints exchange, the request content types, application JSON. And here's the stuff that I post to that endpoint in order to send a mail. And there's just like 10 of these different things. I've got them inside of there. And I want to wire them up. So I basically just want to, in the index method, return a view of those demos. And I'm just going to create a real quick view. I'll choose the list template for the view. I have to choose which model type. And I'm going to choose that O365 API request demo class I just created. And I'll do a full view. And Visual Studio is automatically going to look at that class. And it's going to look at the properties on that class. And it's going to generate a view for me. There's a few things I want to change. So I want to call this O365 REST API samples. And I don't want to create a new one. I don't want to let people create a new one, so I'll get rid of that. Some of the fields I don't want to show, so I don't want to show the primary key or the request content type. In fact, I'll just do the description, the HTTP method, and the request URL pattern. So I'll get rid of those labels. And then the data fields, I'll do the same. So just description, HTTP method, and request URL pattern. And then I don't want an edit link or a delete link. I just want a link to the details for more information on that guy. So there's a link to the details. And if I hit go, I actually have to update a NuGet package real quick. Sorry about that. Looks like it automatically updated the NuGet package. So I'm good. So you can see I've got a really quick little application that's just showing me, hey, here's a bunch of descriptions of different API calls I can make. Here's the HTTP verbs. And then here's the actual request URL that I'm going to make, or the pattern for that request URL. So I've got a bunch of different samples there. But I actually want you to be able to run these on your account rather than just saying, here's some static samples. I want you to be able to see the request and the response. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go in and create a details controller so that when it does this link to the details controller, or sorry, a details method on my controller, so that when it does the link to the details controller, I'll have that. But first, I want to write a little helper class. It's not that little. It's a little bit big. I want to write a helper class. And this helper class is going to handle all of the SSO stuff. So it's going to grab the current claims principle, which is the currently authenticated user. And it's going to create an authentication context. And this authentication context is going to go off to the token endpoint and get me an access token for discovery. And then the discovery client, which is this guy right here, is going to make a call. And there's a method called discovery client.discover capabilities async. And that's going to tell me, hey, for all of the capabilities I've asked for in my access token, where are those service URLs? And it's going to return that back. And all I want to do is take the passed in demo. And depending on whether it's an Exchange or a SharePoint service demo, I want to look up in discovery my files or just the contacts endpoint and replace that formatted zero with this string.format with the actual thing URL that discovery gave me back. And then I want to go and get an access token for that service, the one that discovery told me I should go and talk to. So that's this authContext.acquire token silent async. And I'm going to return that to whatever's calling this method. So I'm going to pass in the demo that I want to process. I'll process the URL to get the actual request URL after I do discovery. And then I'll return back an access token that you can use to go and call that URL. And now I'm actually going to go and do the O365 API's details controller. And you'll notice that this details controller has at the front of it this authorize keyword. And the authorize keyword means, hey, when you call this keyword, make sure that the user is authenticated before you let them do this. So if I try and go here, I'm not authenticated, it actually redirects me to sign in. And then it's going to check and make sure that there's an ID on the request. If there's not, it'll redirect me back to the index. It'll grab the demo that's related to that ID, so it'll pick the item from the array that it wants to show. It'll call that process demo helper to actually process the request URL and get me back an access token for that service. It'll figure out what HTTP method it's going to call, and then it just creates an HTTP client. It calls demo.process request URL. It passes in that access token in the authorization header like we saw in Fiddler, and it adds an if match header if it needs it for that particular request. If there is a request body on the demo, it adds that, and then it just makes the call using the access token, and it returns back the response. So the last thing I want to do is add a view for details. So I'm going to go to details, pick the model class again, and hit add. I won't change the name right now, just for the point of sake of time. I'm going to get rid of a couple things that I want to show, like request content type. I'll show description, HTTP method. I don't need the request URL pattern now, because now I have the actual process request URL. I'll show the request body and the response. And then I don't want this edit link. One last thing, JSON's a little bit ugly to read when it's all kind of packed together. So if I get a JSON response, I want to show that a little bit nicer. So I'll go O365 APIs. I've got a little script that says if there is response JSON, then just call this little JavaScript method JSON stringify to stringify the response JSON and put it inside of this guy, the response JSON element, and hit save. All right, and then I'll just do one more thing. I'm going to go to the route config, and I'm going to make the default router to the O365 sample so I don't have that other home page. And I'm going to go to the layout and remove the other links to the other stuff that was already inside there and call it O365 REST samples. So I'm going to hit save, and I'm going to hit go. And now I've got a really simple application. When I first load it, I won't be signed in. Won't be signed in, but I can see all of the unprocessed URLs. I can click sign in the upper right-hand corner. I can sign in with this particular user. It'll ask me for permission to all those things that I wanted permission to, and I'll hit OK. You can see hello, Rob at junction.onmicrosoft.com, so I'm signed in. Now I can hit details. It'll actually go off and discover where that URL is. It'll get me an access token for that service, and it'll return back the actual response. So you can see here's the process URL, junction-my.sharepoint.com, and then here's the actual files inside my OneDrive. I can do things like go and get a file at a specific URL or put a file. I think I may even have a file there already, so I can demo to you our nice new error messages. Oh, no, I didn't have a file there. So I'm putting a file inside of this shared folder. If I put it again, we have a bunch of nice new error messages that are very descriptive. A resource with the same name already exists, much better than the typical SharePoint, an unknown error occurred. I can update that thing. I can delete it. I can get its files contents. I've got like 2 minutes left, so I won't go through all of these. But I don't need to, because I can actually go here, and I can just hit stop. And I can go to publish. I'm actually going to go to add connected service. I can go into app properties and I can switch this to multiple organizations, and I can type in a redirect UI for a website, o365api demo.azurewebsites.net, and hit apply, hit OK. And then I can actually publish this thing out to Azure Websites. And we're on short enough time that I'll actually just, I've already got it published. So it's actually the exact same application. And you guys can browse to it directly. If you go to aka.ms/o365apis, you can browse that application. You can sign in with your own O365 account, and you can play around with those requests and responses right outside right now. So it's already up there, and go play around with it. All right. So in review, oh, sorry. Let me go back just a second so people can get that URL. I saw a lot of flashes like 2 seconds after I switched. So, okay. Oh, and there is there's one on there where you send email to my demo account. So I'll know if you didn't go and look at it because I don't get an email from you. So make sure you send an email to my demo account. Okay. So in review, idea was, hey, we wanted to understand why we built the APIs, the scenarios we were trying to improve, how you can add these Office 365 services to your own device applications and your own websites. Hopefully you got a good picture of how this works, the underneath machinery, all the details of the requests and responses underneath. You got a bunch of pointers to tools and resources to get you started, to go, to be productive on whatever platform you're choosing. The big takeaway, the big call to action is please, please, please go and add these to your websites. Make your websites, make your device applications richer and more productive by adding integration with Office 365. And then please, please, please do provide us feedback. We look at the feedback very closely. I'm going to just skip on to the slide that has the place for feedback in it. We've got the roadmap. This user voice thing, aka.ms/office-dev-feedback, we look at user voice very closely. So if there's something that's missing, if there's something you don't like, go there, add your item, vote for items that are already there, let us know what you want to see. We use that very heavily to help prioritize the work that we do. So when I say please provide us feedback, I really mean it. We look at this very closely. The last thing is, in terms of resources, really what you need to know is go to dev.office.com. And pretty much everything else is available from dev.office.com. So visit dev.office.com. All the documentation, everything else is available there. Okay. So that's all I have. I'm going to actually be at the Go Develop desk, the Go Develop booth for Office inside of the convention center for most of the rest of the day. If you have any questions, please come by. I'll also be outside. I've got to get out of people's way to set up in just a second. So please come ask me questions outside or out of the way once I'm there. And please do provide feedback. Let me know what could be better and what was useful this time so I know what to include next time. And thanks very much. I hope this was a useful session and worth getting up early in the morning for.